Spirit Guide Underground, April 26, 2008.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I am Peter France and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and doing. I'm sick this week. Yeah, getting off to a rough start. Actually, no, I can't really. I'm just an idiot, and I stumbled over the words there. I've said this thing opening deal a million times now, and I was gonna blame it on my cold that I got last week, but I honestly can't blame it on my cold. I'm just fallible, and I'm not always perfect. All right, you can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads at www.spiritblade.net. Yeah, I got slammed with a nasty cold bug this week. Actually, it was the last Friday night, like a week ago, like the night before last podcast. I woke up in the middle of the night, felt a little bit of weirdness in my throat, and after the podcast last week, things just went downhill. That's what happened last time I got sick, which was also in the last 2 or 3 months. It was like right after the podcast, things just went down the crapper for me and ended up getting antibiotics, as I did this time. Although this time it was a sinus infection, but I don't know, this is unheard of. I mean, I don't have an awesome an immune system as my wife, but to get two cold bugs that require antibiotics in the same, like, 3 month period is unheard of for me. Really weird. Anyway, but I've been doped up with good stuff, making a quick comeback. I've been busy with other work for a few weeks that's kept me from Dark Ritual, doing the subbing gig stuff for Mace Public Schools. It hasn't kept me completely from Dark Ritual, but it's made it hard to build momentum, you know, when I don't have any other distractions, and I can do like 3 or 4 days in a row, then, you know, I really have a chance to kind of get on a roll. Once April has passed, though, I anticipate a completely free calendar until Dark Ritual is finished and in your hands, ears, and minds. I also got an email from Ryan on, that would be Wednesday, saying that the CD cover is nearing completion and he'll have something to me soon. So let's see here. I've got 2 songs and 23 pages left to mix in Dark Ritual. And it may seem like a lot. Sometimes it seems like a lot to me. But I'm going to be able to give every hour of my workday to Dark Ritual very soon. I haven't done the math, and I, you know, don't like to do premature release dates. I've kind of done that already. But here's the numbers. I put these up on the weblog earlier this week. Writing in the third person. That's a little bit of insider secrets here, that it's really just me posting all those blogs. But for those of you that are really dedicated fans of Spirit Blade Productions, you know that it's just the man behind the curtain doing all the postings. The idea there is that eventually, you know, if we bring on another employee, which hopefully we will at some point in our future, it'll just be a nice smooth transition so that one email a week will be from me in the first person and the rest. You know what, it's just a lie. It's just a big lie. I'm just trying to convince everybody we're a big time company, and boy, I'm really emotional today. Alright. Dark Ritual. Here we go. Here's the stats. Never know what to expect on this podcast, right? What Is Pater smoking? That should be the question of the week. Instead of the regular coffeehouse question, what did Pater smoke this week? All right, Dark Ritual has 64 pages and 7 songs. Okay, this is a get out your calculators and your graph paper. This is going to be a nice little high school math problem for you. Dark Ritual has 64 pages and 7 songs. I started mixing in September of 2007. I had already finished before starting mixing. I had already started finished primary mixing for one song. From September through April, I have spent roughly 10 to 12 days per month specifically on mixing. Completing scenes in chronological order, I have finished primary mixing on pages 1 through 41. I now have 2 songs left to mix. Beginning the 1st of May, this is a complicated math problem, isn't it? Beginning the 1st of May, I will spend 18 to 20 days per month mixing for Dark Ritual. After primary mixing is complete, I will take about 2 weeks to master the project, after which it will be immediately available for download purchase, and then soon after that, for CD purchase. So, for all you math folks that feel like putting together an estimate of when you think Dark Ritual will be released, go for it. Maybe we should have like a contest or something. I don't know. Anybody think we should have a contest? Anybody think that we should like give a free copy of Dark Ritual to the person who guesses the closest release date? I don't know. Let me know. If you'd be interested in doing that kind of a contest, let me know. If I get enough replies, then we'll do it. We're still projecting a summer release, but I'll keep you posted on my progress there. I don't anticipate... I really do think this is going to be a summer release. My confidence has not wavered in that at all. All right, so what else do we have to talk about? You know what? That was updates. I just did updates, and I didn't do the special sound effect. Holy crap.
Update information.
I this whole podcast is just falling apart today. Once again, I'd love to blame it on sickness, but I'm just a huge, huge moron, and there's nothing I can do about that. Nothing. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into our main feature.
Primary feature.
Movie review.
Okay, today I am going to review the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Ben Stein, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Win Ben Stein's Money, the Visine commercials. I'm sure you know, you'd know him if you saw him, if you don't know the name already. He acted as the front man for this documentary about the theory of intelligent design and the American scientific community. It runs about 90 minutes, and this film briefly makes its point clear, although it wanders off center for a few minutes. Stein spotlights scientists with strong credibility who have been in some way shut out, fired, denied tenure, blacklisted from the scientific community because of their desire to openly discuss the concept of intelligent design. Throughout the film, we see scientists of all philosophical backgrounds, Christian, Jewish, but also agnostic and even humanist, discussing the barrier they have experienced regarding a public public dialogue over intelligent design. And not all of those specialists and scientists have been ostracized. Some of them, last name Berlinski, I think. I don't have my notes in front of me regarding him, but so I don't really know his history, if he's experienced kind of the... I don't know, backlash or snubbing maybe is a better word from the scientific community, but a lot of the scientists had experienced that. Demonstrating this trend of kind of just sweeping aside people that want to talk about intelligent design is the film's strong point, since this entire complex issue cannot be resolved in a 90-minute documentary. It also can't be resolved online. You know, I mean, there's one of my... I'll just take a little aside here, but one of my frustrations with discussions on this issue or other kinds of political issues or, you know, usually spiritual issues in general is that people think that, you know, putting together a well-thought-out YouTube video presentation really means that they've exhausted the topic, you know? I mean, maybe they don't think that, but I mean, I just have to wonder if we think that we're honestly communicating about these ideas, if we're honestly dialoguing about these ideas. One of the problems with the internet is that, you know, if people can kind of get on the soapbox and kind of just vent their frustrations and express their idea on a message board, but there's no commitment on their part to follow through long term with the discussion. As soon as they get frustrated with somebody else that's posting on the boards, or, you know, whatever their issue is, they can just stop posting and never be heard from again, and we don't progress any further than just those initial bits of venting back and forth, right? And it's the same kind of thing I see in YouTube presentations. And it's not just, you know, I haven't just noticed this trend with people who I disagree with on the issues. I've seen this in people that I'm on their side, but I'm like, you're being an idiot. You're coming across prideful and egotistical. It's a issue that's pervasive on both sides of the arguments that people are most passionate about, I think. And it frustrates me that we can't dialogue about them long term and commit to really just leaving our ego at the door, not be obsessed with winning this little 5-minute debate we're going to have right now, but actually be invested in an open dialogue over a period of time without calling each other's theories silly and stuff like that, but instead just using words like, this theory has a flaw and let's explain why, or explain this to me because it doesn't make sense what you're saying, that instead of saying, no, your ideas are ridiculous and stuff like that, you know, so, and I see that kind of attitude coming from both sides of this argument. So I think a film like Expelled, which primarily focuses on the concept that of communication and dialogue and putting it out on the table for discussion, is what we need most right now. I'm so glad that it didn't spend 90 minutes trying to prove its point of intelligent design, because that would get us nowhere. There'd be a rebuttal on the internet the next day, and the movie would be forgotten. I'm hoping that its plea and the case that it makes for, you know, opening long-term open dialogue about this will be heard. Will be heard by both sides. Even though it's aimed at those that oppose intelligent design, I hope that those on the side of intelligent design too will kind of just think, you know what, let's be open and let's be rational and let's talk about this long term and leave our egos and our emotions. And even though both sides, we have to admit, you know, we've got biases and there's a lot emotionally hanging on these issues, you know, we've got to at least pretend to leave those at the door when we try to discuss these things. So I think this film is a good step forward in that, an initial step forward in that direction. Okay, back to the review of the film. Although Expelled spends some time validating the theory of intelligent design and clearly differentiating it from creationism, which I found interesting, it does this only enough to demonstrate that the theory is sound enough to deserve continuing open and reason-based discussion. Now, I think opponents of intelligent design will look at the parts where they're talking about, the valid points of intelligent design, and they'll immediately, I think they'll kind of miss the point, and I can see how, you know, someone opposed to intelligent design could sit through those parts and say bang, 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 and fire back their arguments and whatnot. But the film... In that sense, of course, the film falls short. But what it's the only thing it's trying to do when it brings up intelligent design is to say this is worth talking about. It's not completely ridiculous and outside the realm of logic. You might see flaws in the theory and in the concept, but it's worth at least discussing. Intercut with vintage film clips, the film has its share of humor, and Stein brings his dry, sometimes awkward charm even to the table. However, some of these clips may be seen as oversimplified, humorous jabs at the neo-Darwinist establishment. Not all of them. Some of them are just kind of keeping things light and interesting, but, you know, others of them are obviously oversimplified jabs. You know, it's entertaining in film, but it's not a good way to promote calm and reasoned discussion, as I mentioned before. Likewise, the film wanders off center in discussing the sociological ramifications of applied Darwinism, using the Holocaust as a weighty example. The point it's basically making in the film is, if we really adhere to this concept of there is no God, there's no absolute morality, and it's really just survival of the fittest, then we should have every right to, every reason to kind of just sterilize people that are impaired in some way, and that the Holocaust maybe wasn't such a bad idea. You know, the point made is a good one, and they also make the point that, you know, this is not something that that every Darwinist is going to believe in, and of course it's not. You know, that would be ridiculous to say that every Darwinist would ultimately lead themselves to the Holocaust. The point that they make is that that Darwinism allows. Enables it that you can't get to, you can't have that kind of mentality without Darwinism. So, you know, it's an okay point, but it seemed devised to provoke an emotional reaction, which an evolutionist will likely find illogical and even offensive. The strongest point of this film is when it's talking about let's have an open dialogue, not when it's saying Darwinism bad, intelligent design good, you know. The main point of the movie, though, remains. The American scientific community is largely unwilling to openly and rationally discuss the concept of intelligent design. That's the point that the film is making. In most cases, the scientists and employers responsible for firing or otherwise blacklisting those interested in intelligent design did not come forward to tell their side of the story. One did. Or kind of one and a half. You can see the movie and see what I'm talking about. Now, normally, this would be seen as a weak point in the film's argument regarding the closed minds of the scientific community. However, since the movie's chief point is that scientists are refusing to speak openly about the issue, it works in direct support of the argument. So, true, we have to admit that there may be another side to some of these stories, but until the leaders and former employers of these blacklisted scientists come out and speak openly, as requested by the film itself, the point made by the film remains unchallenged. So until, you know, the employer of Dr. Susie comes out and says, no, actually, we fired Dr. Susie because she's a loudmouth and she's a jerk and her work was sloppy, blah, 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 then their silence, their refusal to speak, you know, it leaves the view unchallenged that the film is making, that Dr. Susie has been blacklisted because she mentioned intelligent design in one of her classrooms. So anyway, I think that hopefully it will be a prod to get people in the scientific community to discuss this stuff, to get it all out in the open. You know, science really should have nothing to hide. Either side, either, you know, intelligent design, if it's a strong logic-based theory, then it should have no fears of undergoing examination. Likewise, Darwinism, evolutionary theory, neo-Darwinism, whatever you want to call it. Theists will no doubt want to see this movie. I'd also recommend that agnostics, evolutionists, and really anyone else see this film, if for no other reason than to understand what intelligent design does and does not claim. If your impression of the concept connects it automatically to the Bible or Christian theology, then this film will probably be eye-opening for you. The quality overall of the film, it wasn't this phenomenal piece of art. Quality, I'd say, was 7.5. However, veracity, 9.0. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about after seeing this film. And hopefully that's what's going to happen. Hopefully we'll just see a very open dialogue, leaving insults and prideful remarks and passive-aggressive, you know, insults and stuff like that. We'll just leave all that at the door, both sides, and we'll just get out and compare data and be willing to do that on a long, ongoing basis rather than try to be the one with the best, you know, punchline or soundbite or whatever in a 5-minute interview on TV or on YouTube or something like that. Please, please, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this stuff.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word about God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of Galatians chapter 3. Now, Paul begins chapter 3 by trying to redirect the Galatians to the origins of their faith. He says, did you receive the Spirit by observing the law or by believing what you heard? If we aren't constantly revisiting the Bible and refreshing our memory of the truth, it can be easy for influences around us, both secular and religious, to warp our understanding of the truth over time. As the first convert to Judaism, Abraham is a revered figure in ancient Jewish culture, and with that in mind, it makes sense that Paul would use Abraham's faith as an example for us today. Abraham's faith came before any sacrificial or ceremonial laws were formally introduced. Paul demonstrated that faith came before the law, and it was sufficient on some level to be counted as righteousness. And we remember that that means meeting God's standard. On some level, Abraham's faith was considered meeting God's standard. Even Jewish scholars opposed to Christian teaching would have to admit the validity of faith apart from any good works in this case. Paul also demonstrates that God planned all along for people to ultimately be justified, and justified means to be declared or to be made righteous. So God planned all along for people to ultimately be justified by faith. He does this by pointing to God's promise to bless all nations through Abraham's offspring, specifically Jesus. Paul then makes his case against depending on our own goodness to save us. That's a very popular idea today, that if people are asked if they think they're going to go to heaven, their response might be something along the lines of, I think I've been a pretty good person, so yeah, I think God will bring me into heaven. But Paul here paraphrases Deuteronomy 27:26. You can check that out for yourself, but it clearly puts a curse on anyone who fails to obey God's commands, all of God's commands. We don't start out on kind of this neutral playing field, and doing the right thing, it earns us like bonus points or something in God's eyes, and we have to get so many bonus points to get to heaven, or more good than bad or something. Perfect obedience is the minimum requirement. We are cursed by God if we do not obey all of his commandments, consistently, perfectly. So perfect obedience is the minimum requirement. I mean, that sounds pretty hopeless if you just leave it right there, right? And it would be if Jesus hadn't redeemed us. So that's our vocab word for this week from verse 13, redeem. As used here, this word means to buy. So Jesus, when he redeemed us, he purchased us. And the price that he paid was his own life. He gave his own life in exchange for ours. Paul further disconnects obedience from our salvation by reminding his readers that God's promise to Abraham to bless all nations through him was unconditional. Now, there are certainly times in the Old Testament when a blessing from God was conditionally based on obedience, but this was not one of them. So, what was the purpose of the law? Verse 19 asks that question. And it's not an easy one to answer completely. We're certainly not going to be able to answer it completely here, but But it's one that we can easily answer partially right now. The laws set down by God were put in place to show us the difference between humanity and God, to demonstrate clearly that we are broken and need to be repaired. Without the law, we would not know when we were doing something that fails to reflect God's perfect character. So the law was given to guide us toward God, like a supervisor or a tutor, until Jesus came. Look at verses 24 and 25 in this chapter for that. And for more reading on this, you can see Romans 4:15 and Romans 7:7, and always, as always, be sure to check out the context of verses. You never just want to just take one verse individually. You want to look at the context. And another just kind of plug for reading these chapters before you listen to me blab on them. Hopefully you're doing that, because otherwise you're just listening to me blab, and I'm just a dude, and you're missing out on reading the actual words of God that he wants to communicate to humanity. What an awesome thing. So I would really encourage you not to take that for granted. That's a really cool thing. So the law, if we didn't have the law, we wouldn't know what God's standard is. One thing that's kind of interesting, if you think about it this way, the law, it might seem like this big just list of rules and stuff like that, but it's a portrait of God's character. It's revealing to us, who he is. When Jesus says, love your neighbor, he's displaying that God is a God that values the character trait of love. When God says, do not murder, we're seeing here that God values human life, So there's, if you look at God's law, we can see a picture of who he is. And if we didn't have God's law, we wouldn't know who he is. We wouldn't know what he's like, what he values, what he cares about, what he desires for us. Our morality would just be based on kind of whatever everybody's doing right now, which is kind of, you know, what we see in secular culture. You know, people are always morally comparing themselves to other people and not recognizing that the standard was set by the absolute reality of God and what he, you know, his own character and what he set out for us. So anyway, that's hopefully some insight on the law, and we'll make it a little bit more of an interesting thing for you to think about instead of a, hopefully it's not a a bummer and this big kind of weight to think about. I mean, it would be if Jesus hadn't what? If he hadn't redeemed us, our vocab word for the week. Okay, so as this chapter closes, we can see the value Scripture gives to human equality. Although everyone has unique skills and roles, all have equal value to God. Even more, all who choose to believe and trust in Christ, get this, are the huios of God. What the heck is the huios of God? Well, this Greek word, translated as sons in verse 26, implies not just a biological or creative connection. A huios shares the characteristics of its father. This word was specifically used of Jesus and those who put their trust in him, those who we would call Christians. In God's eyes, no matter what we have done, when we choose to put our trust in Jesus and the sacrifice that he made for us, there is a spiritual transaction, and he sees Jesus' record in place of our record. And so he looks at us and sees huios. He sees a child that has his own, that has his own characteristics. So he looks at us and sees perfection. When he looks at people who trust in Christ, he sees perfection. Not because of what they've done. I want to be really clear on that. Not because they, you know, have, they really love Jesus and they're really committed to, it has nothing to do with their level of commitment or their level of obedience. It's their trust that Jesus is the only one that could pay the penalty and make that exchange, you know? So when God looks at those who trust in that exchange and trust in that transaction, he sees perfection. Wow. Try to just wrap your brain around that one and how that transaction works. That's mind-blowing stuff. I don't think we can really comprehend that. I think that's just going to have to be a question for Jesus. Like, how did that transaction exactly work? And that's, yeah, wow. Anyway, the coffeehouse question for this week. What do you think life would be like if everyone lived forever, but here's the catch, they still have a tendency towards sin and selfishness? What do you think life would be like if everyone lived forever? And for the sake of population control, we'll say that we stopped having babies, you know. Just what would it be like to be around people? And, you know, what would it be like if everyone lived forever, but still with tendency towards sin and selfishness? So that's your coffeehouse question. I'd love to hear from you on that. You can send me a recorded message using the microphone on your computer at patersbrain.blogspot.com or pater@pater.libsyn.com, or shoot me an email at pater@spiritblade.net. Hope to hear from you sometime this week on that one. Okay, let's see what kind of responses we got from various issues of last time's podcast. Jennifer got back to me in the coffeehouse question. She said, let's see here. Well, for one, I usually find myself thinking of the people I'll affect with a certain action. Oh, just a refresher. The coffeehouse question last week was when you do things that are right, when you make the right decision or something that's in line with God's will, what usually motivates you? She said, I usually find myself thinking of the people I'll affect with a certain action, whether it's something I should say or not say or do. If it has to do with just myself, I think about whether or not if it's moral in the theological sense. When it comes to the more theological morals, I usually feel confident if I follow the right actions. Sometimes I deliberately and carelessly go against them in my weakness, ignoring everything, and only afterwards I feel really guilty or angry or ashamed. Why? Because in the back of my head, I knew it was wrong, but in the present moment, when I carried out the action, I was being selfish, and here comes the sheep and shepherd metaphor, she says. I wandered off like some rebellious sheep from the rest of the herd to taste some greener grass. Only later did the sheep, me, get a stomachache from eating that grass. Well, yeah, well said, Jennifer. I think that that we can all kind of relate to that, and the frustration of kind of going with our instincts or what feels right or following our heart or whatever, you know? I mean, that's the pop spirituality slogans of today. Follow your heart, do what feels right, but as I've said before, the Bible doesn't have a whole lot of good things to say about the human heart, so we're probably better off finding another method of guidance, another light... oh, crap. Now I lost the metaphor. I'm sick. I'm going to... You know what? I'm going to blame it on that. I don't care. I'm going to blame it on being sick. All right. Steve Rickyberg got back to me on the subject of Uwe Boll. He says, as I understand it, Uwe Boll gets a subsidy from the German government because he makes his films over there and brings the business... or something like that. But in the end, something like up to half of the production is paid for. I forget exactly, but I remember hearing about it a while ago, and it was pretty nuts. Colin Snow also got back to me with some great info on Uwe Boll, but it was like really technical and lengthy, so I won't be able to share it here. But thank you, Colin. That was really cool to read. Yeah, obviously this guy, he's kind of a menace to Hollywood, you know? But he's making a buck, and the almighty dollar rules in Hollywood, so, you know, he's got a job as long as he wants one, I'm guessing. All right, that's about it for this week. I'm going to try and wrap this up as quickly as I can, because my intro segment was just a disaster, and things can only get worse. And so, you know what, I'm just going to say I'm sick, even though I can't blame it on that. I'm going to blame it on it anyway, and say I'm sick, and goodbye, and I hope you come back next week. And until then, I hope in everything that you're doing, I mean, I say this every week, but this really, I hope, is the way that we are all kind of directing our lives, you know, in search of truth. And we're, crap, you know, I tried to get philosophical there. I really did want to underscore that point because I think it's a good one, obviously, since I say it every freaking week. But you know what, I'll just trust you guys to be seeking the truth.
Visit www.spiritguide.net. Great Santa is awesome. Peter is a crazy freak.